Welcome to Your Highness Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Crash.
And I'm your co-host, JR Crash.
How are you doing today, JR?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well, thanks to you. That's for sure. All right, so we're going to start this episode, as we do every episode, with our favorite cannabis-related item and our favorite non-cannabis-related item at the moment. And we call this segment our fave pot, fave not pot. And I'm going to start because I want to. So I am actually going to talk about a strain called Strawberry Cough. And I've had it before, but this particular brand, I don't know. I'm not sure who actually grew it, so forgive me on that one. but the brand is called The Essence, and it's high in myrcene, right, JR? Was it myrcene and limonene?
And beta-caryophyllene.
That's a nice combo for me.
It's a pretty consistent combo with indicas, actually.
Oh.
Even though it's labeled as a sativa, you generally see those top three terpenes very prevalent in indica strains.
I know, there's a lot of debate out there about that. We're not going to get into that right now. But however you want to label it, I really like those terpenes working together. And it just puts me in like a nice heady space, you know. It's uplifting, euphoric. And I think it's really great for creativity. So I'm recommending that. These pre-rolls are a really nice treat this week, as is you being home from work. So anyway, what is your fave pot right now, JR?
Mine is, it's actually a tincture by the company Select, or the brand Select. It is a one-to-one tincture. Primarily, I have a hard time allowing my body to get into a restful place in order to fall asleep. My body has, it's always feeling active. It's hard for my body to feel like restful enough to actually lay still for a solid amount of time in order to fall asleep. And this tincture has done a really great job with kind of relaxing my body, relaxing the muscles inside my body so that I can just kind of lay down and gradually find myself on that journey to sleep. So it's a one-to-one tincture by the brand Select is my favorite pot.
Your fave pot?
Mm-hmm. Or fav pot.
Yeah, as you like to write it.
As I shorthand write it.
I mean, maybe I'm the one who's wrong. Because
I
swear everybody is spelling fave F-A-V, and I spell it F-A-V-E. Am I the wrong one, people? Let me know. So my fave, my fave not pot right now is my eyebrows, because I went to Mana, the Mana Health and Wellness, Mana Life Health and Wellness in downtown Bel Air to get hemp eyebrow tint. And if you are like me and your eyebrows are becoming nothing, and you have to spend too much time every day to make it look like you have eyebrows, this is really everything. I mean, Shelby did such an amazing job. She was so thoughtful and like intentional and did exactly what I wanted, and they look really good. Like, I'm so happy about my eyebrows right now. So yeah, that's mine. What's yours right now, JR?
Mine, it's actually a book. Originally, it was going to be a movie. And then I realized that, like, every time I do a fave not pot, it's a movie or some form of entertainment. So I was like, well, I'll steer on to something a little bit different. I looked at my calendar, my phone, and saw that my scheduled midlife crisis was coming up. So I thought, hey, I got this book. It's You Were Born for This by Chani Nicholas. And it basically helps you kind of create your birth chart, your star chart, and it allows you time to kind of like deep dive into it, into why you are the way you are, who you are, and really kind of discover exactly who you are. It's something that I've actually never done. So being able to sit down, go through this book, you know, reflect on some behaviors, on the way I do things, it's really done a lot for me. So if you are interested in things like that, or coming upon your own midlife crisis and you want to get a jump start on self-discovery, I very much recommend You Were Born for This by Chani Nicholas. It also comes with a fun little app as well.
Yes, Chani is amazing. I'm like just in love with her horoscopes, and the app is amazing. And we are not being paid to say this.
No, not at all.
But yes, definitely check out Chani Nicholas.
Ever feel like life's stress gets to be too much? Welcome to Meet Your Gaia, your natural wellness partner. We are the number one rated provider of Kratom, a 100% natural plant-based solution used in Asia for centuries to help increase focus, energy, and relaxation. Want to know more? Use the code YHPOD to get 10% off your first order today. That's MeetYourGaia.com and code YHPOD for 10% off. Switching gears a bit, you may or may not have heard the news that Oklahoma wants to prosecute a woman who took edibles because her fetus didn't have a medical cannabis card.
Boo.
This is from Jezebel. On Thursday, Pregnancy Justice filed a lawsuit asking the Oklahoma Supreme Court to stop prosecutors from charging pregnant people in the state with felony child neglect for using medical cannabis, a legal medication, during pregnancy. Per reporting from the Frontier, since 2018, when the state voted to legalize medical cannabis use, Oklahoma has charged dozens of women with neglect for cannabis use during pregnancy. In 17 of these cases, the women were prosecuted even though they had medical cannabis licenses. Felony child neglect charges carry a maximum sentence of life in prison in Oklahoma. According to Pregnancy Justice's suit, an Oklahoma mother named Brittany Gonzalez gave birth to a healthy baby in October 2020. But because Gonzalez's infant tested positive for traces of cannabis, Kyle Kabelka, District Attorney of Comanche and Cotton Counties in Oklahoma, charged Gonzalez with felony child neglect in May 2021. This is despite Gonzalez having a valid medical cannabis license and an Oklahoma Department of Human Services investigation, which found the allegation of child neglect against her to be unsubstantiated. Child welfare workers said her home was safe and loving for her child. Yet Kabelka pressed on in his case against Gonzalez, now set to go to trial in January, for a bogus reason that Pregnancy Justice highlights in the lawsuit. When Gonzalez used cannabis in the form of edibles and salves, she was pregnant. Her then fetus did not have its own state license use medical cannabis. Just to repeat that one more time. Gonzalez faces felony charges because her fetus did not have a medical cannabis license. And because of this, she faces life in prison. So I've written about this topic quite a bit. I mean, this is pretty much the most bonkers bat shit or bat guana, as somebody said on social media, case of it that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, we've unfortunately have talked about this on the podcast in the past, you know, about how people get very excited about the legalization of medical cannabis and think that they can just tell Child Protective Services to bugger off. And that's not always the case. And people are being put in very bad situations with their family over something that legally they are allowed to do.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of our podcast, just in the 7 years alone that we've done this, I've interviewed literally hundreds of people as a journalist and a podcaster, over 200 people. And most of those people, I shouldn't say most, that's a broad stroke. Many of those people have children in their lives, their caregivers, their parents, their teachers, what have you. And there is such a varying opinion. There are so many varying opinions about this topic in this industry. This is something that remains so controversial, and it never ceases to amaze me how much of a hot topic it is, no matter how many people I talk to, how normalized, quote unquote normalized, people seem to think plant medicine is nowadays. There are a lot of opinions. Even cannabis advocates and activists, there are ones out there who don't believe that a pregnant person should consume cannabis. There are some that are on the complete opposite spectrum of that, who think that they should, that pregnancy is a perfectly safe time to use cannabis responsibly and safe, you know.
It's really hard to really even come down on any side of that fence because there hasn't been enough testing.
Right.
You know, and that's where we're at, where if it's still a Schedule 1 on a federal level, we're not going to have the testing. So there's not research to really say whether it is fully safe or not. So it makes it very, very difficult to be able to choose a direction that you want to go in. But on a medicinal level, I mean, we've had it just ourselves where, you know, it was suggested that you actually be put on a pharmaceutical that would actually be more dangerous towards a fetus. Mm-hmm. In lieu of something like CBD. And, you know, this is unfortunately a direction that we have gone in on a medical side of things.
Right. I mean, this woman in this case, she even had the recommendation from her doctor. And it doesn't even matter, apparently, because of the way that they were able. The laws are so complex around family and health, and just family law in general. And in state by state, there are different, you know, it just gets so complex. And I think that is one of the major factors that fuel the disinformation and misinformation that's out there, because a lot of times we don't have time to like really take in all of that information. I mean, as I've said, I've researched it a lot, and I'm always learning new things about how many different ways, you know, family services can dismantle families, and it's always disproportionately affecting brown and black people and poor people. I mean, it's not. There are people that will say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I live here and here. And, you know, and you can see so much privilege just in what they're saying, because there are, you know, communities, neighborhoods, areas, what have you, that are specifically targeted for these types of interventions, you know?
Exactly. And it's a state by state basis. I mean, that's one of the issues with it not being federally, at least on a medical level, is that it now becomes a state's rights situation. And much like we've seen with the overturn of Roe v. Wade, when it comes down to state by state, unfortunately a lot more states with religious backings have a tendency to go a lot more conservative and a lot more strict on people. Oftentimes, certain groups of people are directly affected more than others. But when you're leaving it up and you don't have that safety net of federal protection and you just leave it up to the states, then at that point, the states can just decide what they want to do dependent on how they interpret the law themselves. And you've even said it yourself, you know, she had a recommendation, and that's the big difference. You know, we don't have a very strong, clearly defined medical program. every state, even with their medical programs, completely different. You know, instead of having a doctor that's giving you a prescription that they can then monitor, and that's really what they're looking for. They're looking for the ability to monitor your intake. I'm not saying I agree with that or not. I'm just saying that's what they're looking for. So because we don't have prescriptions, we have recommendations, and it's very broad. It's you have any one of these, you know, specific ailments, you're allowed to have however much up until a certain limit that you want, and it can be pretty much anything, and it's a very loose free-for-all. And because it was allowed to kind of roll out that way, it very much became treated as just a gateway to adult use. It was never really taken serious as a medicine because it was viewed as, oh, people are just finding a reason to be able to consume an adult use. And it's not really considered medical because it's not being tracked. People aren't really dosing themselves. It's not very specific. You know, so we ended up in a situation where it's being treated, even though people can be taking it medicinally, is treated more along the lines of, say, alcohol, which is in 20 different states illegal to consume when you're pregnant.
Right.
So I'm not saying, yet again, that's not a judgment or an agreement to that law. I'm just saying that that's how it's being viewed as
right.
in that same viewpoint. So we really need to kind of course correct a little bit and have a very strong, organized, clearly defined medical program that's nationwide. And then you can then allow states by states to then go on a recreational or adult use level if they wanted to. But we really need to have a very strong medical program of what you can consume, when you can consume for that specific ailment, so that it's treated more serious from the medical community. So that way they're not just viewing it as an illicit drug, because it really ultimately comes down to not even necessarily state law, but it's the doctor itself, whether or not they choose to want to report it or not. And if you have a very conservative doctor that just strongly disagrees
or
with
nurse
it,
like or really nurse. Any type of yeah. What are they called again? I know this
nurse practitioner,
the people that are supposed to report to CPS. It's nurses, teachers, school officials. Something about a reporter. I know that. But those people are allowed to, if they have any concern. And those concerns I've seen range from just the smell of cannabis.
Exactly.
To the fact that you have a social media presence around plant medicine. I mean, that's literally it.
Yeah.
Enough to intervene and destroy families. And also to your point about, you know, the fact that we don't have this program that allows us to do extensive research. Cannabis was used for centuries in obstetrics, but before prohibition, physicians would prescribe it for PMS, difficult childbirth, menopause, cramps, nausea, and more. Using CBD right now, though, can still, even just CBD, can still get you into a lot of trouble as a pregnant person.
If it's full spectrum, and, you know, it can pop up on a toxicology, and they can then use that to essentially ruin your life if they just happen to disagree with their perception of your lifestyle.
Right. I mean, I can't even count how many flyers and signs I saw at the OBGYN that I went to when I was pregnant, saying basically that they would report you if you tested positive for cannabis use, and cannabis use is, you know, really dangerous during pregnancy. And the thing is, obviously, we can't upheave, you know, we can't completely dismantle the system overnight, right? Like, that is something that's just not going to happen. But what can happen is changing the way that we talk about cannabis and drugs in general with children.
Exactly.
I mean, if we're empowering our youth, if we're seriously though, I mean, a lot of the reason why this is such a controversial topic is because prohibition and the war on drugs have shaped the education that we grew up with. and many people have grown up with many centuries now. Not centuries, but yeah. Is it centuries?
Well, no. I would say decades. Centuries is hundreds of years.
I'm just throwing out centuries.
Just throwing out centuries.
No, but because we have been conditioned, because societally speaking, we have been conditioned for so long that cannabis doesn't have any medical benefit, despite there actually being proof that it was being used just for those very things beforehand. A lot of people just grab onto that fear because it's a fear of the unknown. And so if we can talk about the unknown, even if we don't have answers, because I know just you and I alone have changed our opinion and reframed our thoughts on this whole topic many times.
Multiple times. I mean, I'm a Gemini, so that's yeah. You know, that's my jams. But but even without that, you learn more information and you adjust to that. And the thing is our generation, we were basically taught a fear-based curriculum when it comes to drugs, if you will, with it there, with the after-school commercials where people are being dragged to hell just for hitting a pre-roll, you know, it's like really wild stuff. Everything was very focused on fear. You're going to go to jail or you're going to die. You know, those were the two options, you know, where we need to move the conversation. We need to be able to trust our young portions of society, our children,
younger generations,
our younger generations, yeah. By empowering them with knowledge, with giving them the knowledge and allowing them to learn about it and grow and choose their direction instead of trying to force them through fear, empower them through knowledge.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And with that, that's the perfect segue to talk about what we have for you today. We have a special gift to set off your holiday season or just put the cherry on top of your holiday season, whatever way you want to frame that. I'm not sure where people are in their holiday season right now or if they're even celebrating, but this is a gift to you regardless. We have been working on this for some time, and we actually have, it's two parts, because as we said, we're really passionate about changing conversations, you know, demystifying and destigmatizing plant medicine in all its applications. And so with that, we have two things. First, we have a new series on our sister podcast, Getting Personal with Plant Medicine, where it's a Talking to Kids series where we'll be talking about different intersections of plant medicine and how to discuss those intersections with children. So the first episode in the Talking to Kids series features me and Maggie Wilson talking to author Melanie Kahn, who wrote the book Mason Goes Mushrooming. And Melanie talks to us about how to have conversations with children about foraging and mushrooms of all kinds and basically just demystifying mushrooms and basically getting rid of the fear, because I think a lot of us are scared of mushrooms out in the wild. We don't really know that much about them because, again, we haven't been taught, as you know. So our goal with that is that we'll learn something. And also, you know, we're bringing in experts. We'll learn something from the experts. And we hope that you all get something from that as well. So the second thing that we have is a kids podcast that we have been working on for some time. And it's called Heal You, Feed You, Kill You. So we have a sample of the first episode right after this segment. So you can skip right ahead. We will have it time-stamped in the show notes. And you can play this for your children, your nephews, nieces, whomever you might think would enjoy it. And in this segment of our first episode, it's basically a preview, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's more of a preview. It's because it's taking out the main segment and giving you
the feature with the
the feature, the expert feature segment of the episode, just to kind of show you, give you a little taste of, of what you can look forward to.
Yes, and we really, really want your input on this. So please send in any kind of feedback. Let us know if you played it for a child and what they thought. And we are not sensitive, or at least, well, we like to say we're not sensitive, but we no, I'm kidding. We enjoy the feedback, truly, and we will send you a gift for and another gift. We'll give you more gifts. We have more things in store. So
ultimately, with this, with the feedback, obviously we love hearing that we're great, but more so than just giving ourselves a pat on the back, this is really a passion project so that we can reach out to these younger generations and kind of shape, you know, allow them that, that empowerment that I was talking about earlier, to make their own decisions in life, but in an educated way so that they are still safe, but not afraid. So definitely hit us back if you have anything that you feel that we should adjust or change that you think may help that message reach easier and better to a younger audience, because that's more important to us than just being able to put another podcast in our belt, if you will.
Yes. I love that. Thank you for putting that so succinctly. So with that, please enjoy the preview of Heal You, Feed You, Kill You with Melanie Kahn. So Melanie, where do mushrooms grow from?
So Dana, mushrooms grow everywhere. And one of the things I like to teach young foragers, as I call them, and foragers are people that go out and look for things that they can either eat or use. So, for example, you might forage for your car keys if you've lost them in a draw, but you might go foraging in the woods looking for wild mushrooms because you want to either eat them or potentially photograph them or use them on your centerpiece for Thanksgiving. Mushrooms have a lot of different uses, but the places that they grow is everywhere. So mushrooms are literally all around us. And some of your listeners who might be new to thinking about mushrooms may not know that they come in all shapes and sizes, including microscopic. So, for example, the yeast that doubles in size and makes your bread is actually a fungus.
Wow.
That's a pretty cool thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a really cool thought. So, speaking of the size, how do they change shape as they age? I know that's, it's different for every mushroom probably, right?
Well, I think going on the yeast analogy, mushrooms like to replicate, right? They like to grow bigger and they do it very, very quickly. So many of your listeners may have already watched the movie Fantastic Fungi. And if they haven't, I totally recommend that you do. It's on Netflix and it's really good. And it shows microscopic photography of mushrooms in time lapse growing very, very quickly, quicker than you would ever imagine. They can double in size in the case of small ones, every few minutes, but in the case of large ones, every few hours.
Wow.
So that is an amazing thought. Yeah. I mean, mushrooms are cool beyond our wildest imagination, but when you think about their capacity to grow, it's fairly mind-boggling. And they only need two things. They only need moisture in the form of water, rain, etc., or heat in the form of sunlight. They need both of those things in order to grow. The sunlight doesn't have to be direct sun, like from the sun. Some mushrooms like to actually grow in the dark, but it needs that heat that comes from either the sun or from other sources. So those are the two things that you will need to have in order to see mushrooms grow.
That's fascinating. Truly. So is it really safe to touch all mushrooms?
So the short answer to that is yes, but it has some context, meaning I like to explain what that looks like. So touching mushrooms, even mushrooms that could give you a bellyache or might even be more seriously poisonous, touching mushrooms is not going to make you ill. There are some things in the woods, for example, that you shouldn't touch: poison ivy, poison sumac or oak, stinging nettles. Those things actually you really can get quite ill from touching, right? The mushrooms have to be ingested, meaning eaten, and put through your digestive system in order to cause any kind of illness or poisoning. Now, that said, I recommend safe mushroom practices. And what are those practices? Well, if you are going out in the woods and you are gathering mushrooms that you don't know what they are, you don't want to mix them with any edible mushrooms in your basket. And also, you want to come home and wash your hands. Just like if you were out in the garden digging in around the earthworms in the soil, or you went out fishing and you caught a fish and you touched it or you scaled it, or if you went hunting and then, you know, you were out in the woods doing that. There are many hobbies that when you're done doing them, even art, painting, watercolor, you want to just wash up afterwards so that you get anything on your hands off of them. And having clean hands in general is just a really good idea. And then if you're going to be exploring mushrooms that you don't know what they are, you want to avoid putting them anywhere near your mouth, because that's the entrance to your digestive system, right? So I like to urge people to use common sense and caution when handling a lot of things: glue, laundry detergent. You know, there's many things that you touch throughout the day that you do not eat, and mushrooms are one of them. One must never eat a mushroom that you don't know exactly what it is. So that is a little caveat or a little context for the greater question of whether you can touch them. I hope that that's helpful.
That's very helpful. So when we're out there looking at mushrooms, how can we tell what is poisonous and what is not?
The way to learn about mushrooms, Diana, is exactly what we're doing right now: education, right? Starting with the very basic fundamental ideas about this study of mycology, which means the study of mushrooms, right? If you have an interest, even if you're a little person, you may have an interest in mushrooms because they are fascinating, right? And you might want to just get interested with them by taking photographs of them, because they come in all shapes and cool colors. You might want to examine their underside and see their gills, which are those, the gills, like imagine a gill on a fish, you know, they look like gills on a fish underneath them, or they might have a spongy underside, like the sponge at your sink. There may be all sorts of things going on underneath a mushroom. You might cut it open and see some critters that are enjoying having it for dinner. There's all sorts of things that mushrooms reveal upon a very close inspection. And you can also study where they grow. You can see what kind of trees they like, what kind of ferns or moss, where they are on in the forest. And you can learn about your habitat by seeing and starting to look around with what I call mushroom eyes, which is an ability to see mushrooms just by making yourself aware that they are literally everywhere. They're in your parks and your playgrounds, in your cemeteries, in your sidewalks, And obviously they're out in the forest and on trails. They're growing up the sides of trees that are dead and dying. They're helping to decompose the leaf litter in the forest in order to make all of our soil. They are busy, busy creatures. And that's actually another really good point. Mushrooms are neither plants nor animals. They are their own specific genus, species, ecosystem, whatever you want to call that mass of things that one studies. Fungi and mushrooms in general are their own area of study. And they deserve to be studied because they're very important to human beings. We cannot exist without mushrooms, which is a very cool thought.
And that's a really interesting point about calling mushrooms plants, because I do it all the time. And so that is really something to think about. And I appreciate you giving us a lot to think about. I learned so much in such a short time. So please come back again.
Oh, I absolutely will. There is a mushroom that you might have seen, Diana, growing in the woods that is a plant. And it's the white ghost pipe. It grows out of the ground. Yes, you're nodding. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And it looks like a mushroom, but it has no chlorophyll in it. And it is still a plant. Chlorophyll is the green stuff that goes through leaves and feeds the plant, right? Mm-hmm. Most plants need that in order to live. However, a ghost pipe, which is that clump of, looks like an upside down, you know, a funnel shaped pipe growing on the ground, usually a bunch of about anywhere from 6 to 12 of them, they signal to the observer that mushrooms are nearby because they get their nutrients from underground. Wow. They get their nutrients from the mycelial system. And the mycelial system is all of the web of mushrooms that are like their roots existing under the soil in the forest, under the leaves. And those ghost pipes are coming up out of the ground, and they don't need sunlight, and they don't need to go through photosynthesis, which is taking the sun and converting it to energy, because they're getting their nutrients from the mycological web underneath. So you know if you see those that there are mushrooms nearby.
Wow.
I know, right? So they're all, and so that's always a trick question in the woods when you pick up a ghost pipe. Is this a plant or is this a fungus?
Wow.
And you know, it's kind of both and neither.
That is amazing. I keep saying wow, but I can't, like, when every time I learn something new about mushrooms, it's just it is fascinating, and there's so much more to learn. So Thank you. And your book is such a big help with that.
Yes. And my book, Mason Goes Mushrooming, is a beginner's guide to mushroom hunting for families. And believe it or not, for kids, because I'm a strong believer that getting out in the woods and looking for mushrooms, whether you want to eat them or not, is a very, very fun treasure hunt, a very exciting pastime that is free and accessible for all families. And you don't have to go out looking for mushrooms to eat. You can simply want to examine them, marvel at them, take photographs of them, lay them down on a piece of paper and see the beautiful spore prints that emerge overnight when all of their spores drop. There's so many things you can do with them that have nothing to do with food, but just the fact that mushrooms exist and are there for our enjoyment, it's worth going out and hunting.
Absolutely. Thank you again. Thank you for listening. Until next time, stay high and beautiful. This episode was produced by Your Highness Media. Audio editing by J.R. Crash. Intro music by Your Mom Likes My Music. Subscribe to our Substack, Your Highness Newsletter, for the latest announcements and event updates.